into this world of writing for a moment. Og, a voracious reader, researcher, could you share with those who are listening the process Og went through? I remember a discussion about the Christ Commission where there's years of notes. What it took to write this simple book. I remember in Scroll 1 where he talks about the fact that just as a lot of grapes are distilled to make one glass of wine, so it is with the words in this book, that there are a lot of there's a lot of wisdom from the ages that has been distilled into each one of these words and sentences. And you sense that with everything that he reads. This wasn't simple. It was very complex, made into something very simple. Share with us, if you would, your insight in that process.
It's a hard story to begin with. I don't really know where to begin. This was Og's first book. He was editing Success Unlimited magazine at the time. He had written an article about Ben Hogan, and a publisher in New York was at the dentist getting a tooth filled and read the article and wrote to him and said, if you ever want to write a book, contact me. Well, how many want-to-be authors get this kind of an opportunity? And it frightened Og to death. You know, finally somebody's calling his bluff. This is after years of writing fillers and short stories and selling a little here, a little there, maybe something here, maybe something there. But, you know, basically we papered the bathroom with rejection slips. And so he decided that he would contract for and write a book. Well, his love has always been biblical history. He spent a lot of years reading lots of books about the Bible, and his one and only book that he ever really wanted to write was Christ Commission. And he was researching that book long before Betty ever walked into his life. And I think he went into some of those notes to get some of the storyline for Greatest Salesman. But it was just logical that he would start his writing with something in the biblical sense.
In that time period.
In that time period. And it's not a Bible. It doesn't resemble the Bible in any way, shape, or form. It is simply a beautiful plan on how to improve your life and how to enjoy your life, which I think is the biggest importance that we have, because so many of us live in fear, especially right now and at times, and we can't. It stifles us. It takes our breath away. Yeah. It destroys us inside. And if we continue to live in this horrible state of fear, the enemies have won, and that can't be. And this is, I think, it's what, even before this had happened, you know, this book was written in 1960. I was writing it in 1967. And so he was trying to project to people that it is okay to be a success. It is okay to be happy. It is okay to be joyful. One must not walk around in a state of doom and gloom. You pay your dues as you arrive at the different levels of success in your life. And success to me is not the same thing as it is to you. Success doesn't necessarily mean the biggest house on the block, driving a Rolls Royce or whatever your car choice is. It's what you feel inside of you that makes you successful and measures your degree of success. And this is what he tried to project through all of his books.
So he's writing The Greatest Salesman. He comes up with this fun camel boy, Hafid, who's got a girlfriend, in common vernacular.
Right.
But in those days, he had to have some wealth to justify the marriage. And he's a lowly camel boy. So he goes to his boss, basically, and says, you're the greatest salesman in the world. Help me become one. And when his boss discovers why, he certainly gives him that opportunity. And he sets up this wonderful story because the boss apparently had received from someone else and had been passed down for generations this chest filled with the 10 ancient scrolls, the laws of success, containing all of this wonderful information. And he's now ready to give it to Hafid because he's been told that Hafid is the next person to receive it as a youth, and he'll now apply these principles. I can almost feel Og saying, now what do I do? I have to deliver on the 10 scrolls. I mean,
right.
I actually have to write them. Take us back to that moment in time and what he was going through emotionally.
Well, he was literally tearing out his hair. And we always teased him because he did not have a very full head of hair to begin with. And we'd say, you can't do that. You can't afford it. You know, stop it. I don't want to live with a bald man. No, seriously. He had reached a deadline time. And probably as close to panic as I have ever seen Og Mandino. True panic. Now, he'd get a little hyper over things, a little upset, because he didn't have the longest fuse in the world. But he was truly in a state of panic, and he was working. He was running, editing the magazine, which required lots of hours and lots of creativity. So he was drawing on those juices all the time. It wasn't like he was out doing some manual labor and could put his mind at creating while he was doing that. He had to create for the magazine, and at the time it was a very small magazine, and everybody there wore several hats. So Og was not only editor, he was also working in layout, and he was working in advertising, and he was working in subscription sales, and I'm not sure if he swept the floor or not. Probably. But so when he came home, he was physically and mentally spent. So it was difficult for him. He would come home, we would have dinner, he'd put the boys to bed. That was his joy in life, was getting the two bathed and saying prayers and getting them down for the night. And then he would take a little nap, and my job was to make sure he woke up and went in and wrote for a few hours. That was not the easiest task. That was the hardest part of this whole book, was getting him up at night to go in and write. And then I had to get up.
Thank you for doing so.
You're welcome. I think it was worth every iota of energy that I put out. It has been more than come back double-fold. But anyway, I had to get up in the morning to get the kids ready for school and go to work. So it was like we passed in the night, literally, for the year plus that he was working on this book. But so I would get him up. He would go make a pot of coffee, go in the office, or I'd make the pot of coffee, bring it up, put him in the office, say goodnight, and I would go to bed, and he would write. Well, one night I woke up like about 4 o'clock in the morning, and he's not in bed, and I can hear the IBM down the hall going clickety-click, 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 and I'm thinking, uh-oh, it's either really coming good or else he is struggling and not going to give up. And I thought, I think I will go make him another little thermos of coffee. So I toddle downstairs, half asleep and half awake, make a pot of coffee, bring it back up to him, walk in. He's got this glazed look on his face, and I thought, he's going to fall asleep any minute. Put the coffee down, took the other thermos away, and walked out. Didn't say word one. Went back to bed. My alarm goes off at 6:30. I can still hear the typewriter going, clickety, 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 click. So I get up. I get ready to go to work. I've got the kids ready. I made him, he was into English muffins at that point in time. So I made him an English muffin, and I took him up a glass of juice and some more coffee, kissed the back of his head, and walked out the door and went to work. Well, I came home, I guess it was around noontime, for a lunch break, and to see if he was okay, because he wasn't answering the phone. That panicked me to death. And he wasn't in the office. So I came home to check on him, and he is zonked out on the bed. Just literally passed out. I finally roused him, and I said, are you sick? And he said, no, I'm done. And I said, done what? He said, I did all 10 scrolls last night. He said, I don't remember a word I wrote. He said, I sat there, and the words just flowed. He said, it was just like somebody was moving my hands on the keys. And I just kind of looked at him, and he said, I've never written like this before. He said, it was such an awesome experience. And I said, well, when do I get to read them? And he said, soon. He said, I think I need to do a little polishing on them. And I said, well, I think you had better call your office and let them know you're alive. And he said, well, I'm not going in. And I said, well, call Pat. His secretary was Patty at the time. I said, call Patty and tell her, because she's worried, too, because I called you there and you weren't there. And he said, you call her. So I called Patty. I told him he was alive, but he wasn't coming in. And he got up sometime that afternoon and went back to work polishing up those books, the scrolls for the book, and that was it. But, I mean, he literally had a gun to his head because he was past his deadline, and the crucial part of the book hadn't been written. Og never worked with an outline, so we didn't have an outline for this. It wasn't like he could take his outline and go, okay, I'll deal with this issue here and this issue and this scroll. I mean, he had to start from ground zero and do these scrolls that night. And it's, you know, I still am in awe of the fact that 10 scrolls got written, rewritten, in less than 24 hours. And basically that's how it was. Now, I will admit, Scroll 2 was an issue because I typed his manuscript.
Scroll 2 on love.
Yes, yeah. Scroll 2. And your favorite, too.
when I needed badly.
Yeah. And I would type his books before they went off to the printers and put them in, he would call it, in pretty form. And I read as I type. And I'm typing, and I get up to scroll 2, and I'm trying to type scroll 2, and I can't. I cannot get it to flow. It's horrible. I took it downstairs, and I handed it to him, and I said, I don't have a clue what you're talking about, and I bet there are a lot of people out there that don't rewrite it. And he was just devastated. And I said, while you're working on this, I'll work on scroll 3. And so I went upstairs and typed scroll 3, lickety-split right through it, 4 right through it. The rest of them, no problem at all. He's still downstairs struggling with scroll 2.
Scroll 2 is a victim of his prodigious vocabulary.
Yeah. Well, this was something, too, that Og had attended. He had a great, extensive, wonderful vocabulary. And he would use these 24-letter words. Well, I am not... I enjoy reading, but I don't have great comprehensive reading skills. And if I have to read a book and have a dictionary at my elbow to figure out what the author's talking about, you know, I'm only going to get through maybe 2 chapters, and then it's going, whoops, over the shoulder and out the door. And I felt other people would felt the same way as I did. So I said to him, I said, you have to put these books in language that I can understand, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there like me. And if they need help, they need it now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have to take a class in vocabulary, read the dictionary, get out the encyclopedia and look up this, that, and something else, or go to the library for a reference book. They want and need some instant gratification.
We're starting to talk about a very little-known fact, that you were the editor for us, the common folk, so that we could read this and understand in first reading, not just this book.
Well, after this first one, he wrote to me.
Yep.
He wrote at my level. And I always felt kind of like the village idiot because I had such trouble understanding some of these things that he read. But I'm not ashamed of it because I think this weakness in me produced a strength in his writing and definitely gave him a strength because he accepted it. Did not belittle me for it, but accepted it as a fact of life. And, I mean, this is a person who had been reading since he was 4 years old. His mother taught him to read before he went to school. He was in first grade, and he memorized and repeated the Declaration of Independence for the class. I'm not quite sure what it was for, because maybe it was at Memorial Day or something, because obviously they weren't in school on the 4th of July. But he had such vivid memories of that. And even his sister remembers it, and she's 3 years younger than he was. So there's always been this great mind in this man. And because of his love for reading, he had this very extensive vocabulary. And
Well, thank you for making the complex so simple.